From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Happy Friday, ladies and gents. Yes, it is Friday. I can't believe the week has flown by. The final day, before the weekend. Hopefully you all had a great week, and we're so glad you've allowed Current Sports to be a part of your week. And I tell you what, we have a fantastic show in store for you. In just a moment, I'm going to be talking with a woman who is a part of a pretty cool skydiving team that will be flying in before the Michigan State and Eastern Michigan game at Spartan Stadium tomorrow. Pretty cool stuff. I'll talk with Amanda Scheffler, who is the co-founder and director of the Misty Blues. Of course, we'll also chat about the Michigan State and EMU game, give you a preview as well, along with our predictions. And we'll hit on U of M and Utah, Lions and Packers, and so much more. And it's Friday. And each and every Friday, we love to reflect on some of the biggest stories and moments on Current Sports throughout the week. You don't want to miss that. All of that and so much more. But hey, before we get to all of that, here's Andrew Hayes with your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners.
I'm Andrew Hayes, and here are your headlines for September 19th, 2014. Ithaca High School seeks its 60th straight victory tonight as it travels to St. Louis. Ithaca has won the past three meetings against St. Louis by a total of 209-0. Other high school games tonight, Pewama Westphalia battles Dansville for the tops of the CMAC conference. Those teams are tied at 2-0 along with Fowler for first place in the league. Grand Ledge takes on Okemos, and Eaton Rapids travels to Williamston. All of those games start at 7 p.m. MSU men's soccer starts Big Ten conference play tonight. MSU men's soccer starts Big Ten conference play. The number 16 ranked Spartans travel to Maryland. The game starts at 8 p.m. and can be viewed on Big Ten Network. In college football, Michigan State has had 2 weeks to think about its loss to Oregon and looks to bounce back against the Eastern Michigan Eagles. Kickoff is at noon on Saturday. Right now, the Vegas books have Michigan State favored by 45.5 points. On the other side of the state, Michigan will face Utah at 3:30 in Ann Arbor. In NFL news, Nick Fairley and Joik Bell were both limited in practice yesterday, according to Lions writer Tim Twentyman. Defensive end Ziggy Ansah and linebacker Travis Lewis both sat out practices this week. The Detroit Tigers start a big three-game series against Kansas City Royals this weekend. The Tigers currently lead the Royals by half a game and are in jeopardy of losing three straight for the first time since August 21st through the 23rd. Last night, the Atlanta Falcons plundered the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, defeating the team 56-14. Atlanta was up 56-0 heading into the fourth quarter and won by the second largest margin in Falcons history. Also during the game, return man and wide receiver Devin Hester scored his 20th return touchdown, breaking the previous record of 19 set by Deion Sanders. Hester high-stepped his way into the end zone as an homage to the retired cornerback. Those are your quick hit headliners for September 19th. Now back to Al to start the show. Phone lines are now open.
Thanks a lot, Andrew. Appreciate that. Again, those were your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on anything that you just heard about throughout our headliners, or if you want to give us a score prediction on Michigan State versus Eastern Michigan tomorrow at Spartan Stadium, or U of M versus Utah, they will be kicking off tomorrow as well, or even the Lions and Packers, anything, any prediction, just call up 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. 855-9527, ladies and gents. Okay, also have to remind you all that Current Sports, we don't have a TV show this week, and same goes for next week as well, taking a two-week hiatus, but we will be back in action on October 1st, I believe. Yes, October 1st, which is a Wednesday. Of course, we record each and every Wednesday evening here at the WKAR-TV studios. I'll be sitting down with Robert Huntoon, who is the general manager of the Capital City Stealth, which is Lansing's minor league football team. So Robert Huntoon will be sitting down with me to chat about a lot. Also, even though we are not airing a Current Sports TV episode next week, we are still taping one due to the fact that next week is homecoming. Can't believe that. Homecoming is right around the corner, ladies and gents. I mean, one of my favorite times of the year as many MSU alum come back and enjoy the homecoming parade. Actually, WKR, we will be in the homecoming parade just like last year. I had a great time walking alongside the WKAR truck. We had Robin, who was also with us. Yes, the superhero Robin of Batman and Robin. He was walking with us. We had Super Y. For all of you kids out there, Super Y, I believe, will be making another return to next week's homecoming parade. And so much more. It was great meeting and greeting all of you out there from around mid-Michigan, handing out flyers and promoting WKAR and all of the fantastic programs that we have. But with homecoming, you know, happening, you know, and with the homecoming parade, every homecoming parade has to have a grand marshal. And this year's grand marshal for the homecoming parade is the one, the only, Jamel Hill. Yes, Jamel Hill is a graduate from right here at Michigan State University. She got her degree in journalism right here at the Communication Arts and Sciences College, has gone on to do some outstanding things in the world of journalism. She's worked for the Lansing State Journal, the Detroit Free Press, and now she's at the what I call the Megadome, being ESPN. Yes, ESPN. She's a co-host of a show called Numbers Never Lie. Maybe you guys, all you ESPN fanatics out there, have been flipping through channels and seeing Numbers Never Lie. I believe it airs at noon every day, but she's the co-host along with Michael Smith. Does an outstanding job on that show. But Jamel will be honored and will be returning to Lansing to, I guess, you know, just go back in time and just meet everybody that she grew up with and went to school with and so on and so forth. And in light of that, she'll be joining me. I'll be stealing about an hour of her time here at Michigan State to sit down and pick her brain about so many things. We'll be taping a Current Sports, a special edition of Current Sports with Jamel Hill, again, at the WKAR-TV studios on the first floor of the Communication Arts and Sciences building. I am certainly looking forward to it, picking Jamel's brain about how she got started in journalism, why she got started in journalism, her views on women in the field of sports broadcasting and sports journalism in general, and also growing up in my hometown. Yes, the west side of Detroit. She attended Mumford High School. So if you want to meet and greet Jamel during that episode and be a part of the live TV studio audience, keep tuning in to Current Sports Radio, because I'm going to tell you how to do that starting next week, okay, folks? And you better jump on it when I tell you to do it, because there's only 80 seats inside of the WKAR-TV studio. So you got to really, really, really be listening each and every day next week, because I'm going to tell you about that wonderful opportunity, folks. So, again, that'll be next week. All right, folks, but we have a great show in store for you today. Now, you know, I have a bucket list, and I'm sure many of you out there have a bucket list, and you know there's things on there, you know, that I hope to accomplish before I leave this earth. You know, certain experiences that I want to experience, such as, you know, riding a horse, getting to go into the jungle and go on a safari. You know, there's so many things on my list. I'm a pretty adventurous guy. I love thrills and trying new things and just having fun. Life is about fun, because you only live once, right? And you know what? One of those things happened to be skydiving. Yeah, skydiving is definitely on my bucket list, ladies and gents. So during our second segment of today's show, you will get to hear from a woman who is an expert. She's an expert, folks, in the world of skydiving. She's been doing it for quite some time. And the reason we're having her on is because her and her team, her name is Amanda Scheffler. She is the co-founder and director of the only Yes, the only, and I do mean only, folks, the only, world's only, all-woman skydiving demo team, Amanda Scheffler. She is the co-director and founder of the Misty Blues. Yes, the Misty Blues. I tell you, folks, they are one incredible team. They have about, looking on their website right now, they have 8 members. And the reason why we're having Amanda on is that they will be actually skydiving right on the field, right onto the field prior to kickoff of the Michigan State and Eastern Michigan football game tomorrow. You do not want to miss that, folks. All of you, you know, who are or who will be attending the game, I tell you what, you better look in the sky because it's going to be a pretty cool viewing of seeing Amanda and her team hit the grass at Spartan Stadium. So you'll be hearing from Amanda in just a sec as to how this idea came about, her background in the world of skydiving, and even one skydiving scare. Yes, scare, folks. Yeah, even though I want to do skydiving, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm always thinking about, you know, what if this happens? What if this goes wrong? I mean, you have to logically think about that if you're going to do something as crazy as jumping out of a plane thousands and thousands and thousands of feet in the air, right? So she's going to talk about a scare she had and also a pretty cool cause of which the Misty Blues are jumping for. So they're not just jumping just to, you know, cause a big fiasco and skeptical and then make it pretty entertaining for the fans who attend tomorrow's game. But they're doing it in honor of a pretty cool cause that you definitely want to hear about. So stay tuned. Again, that will be during our second segment of Current Sports. You don't want to miss that. But in the meantime, how about we dive into that Michigan State and Eastern Michigan football game right now and sort of break it down and sort of dive into what this game could mean for Michigan State. Alex Shark, the man behind the glass, now joins me to wrap up this Friday Current Sports. How you doing, my man, Alex?
We're doing pretty well, Al, and this game means a whole lot because as much as the Oregon loss hurt, with the whole college football playoff, points do matter.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Now with Florida State, with Jameis Winston out, they might face a loss this weekend. There are a lot of teams that are on the cusp of potentially being upset, which could let Michigan State up in there again in contention if they score a certain amount of points and if they win by a considerable margin.
Yeah,
so as much as this is a redemption from a toss loss at Oregon, this is more of a basically proof of how they can compete in the BCF's playoff, if they can get there.
Well, I'll tell you what, Alex, I'm definitely going to get to that point because that's one of the points I want to make, because Mark D'Antonio had some interesting comments earlier this week concerning running up the score that I will get to and talk about in just a sec. But I'll tell you what, just looking at this game, I mean, doesn't it kind of feel like another season opener for you? I mean, because, you know, MSU, they haven't played in 2 weeks now. They have a poor outing against Oregon, and, you know, they have 2 weeks to think about it. It sort of, for me, I mean, it feels like, okay, this is like the birth of a new season for them. And, you know, I can't help but think about it. I've been thinking about it for the past 2 weeks, and I'm sure it's been on the minds of many Spartan fans out there. I'm sure it's been on the minds of the MSU football players and even head coach Mark D'Antonio and his entire coaching staff. Just the what-if factor. What if Michigan State beat Oregon? You know, what if they came in there and upset Oregon? And I tell you what, if they would have, I mean, the tone of the conversation that we're having on today's show would totally be different. It would totally be different. We'll be talking about MSU, being ranked as a top 3 team, a top 4 team, if they could be ranked number 1 in the nation possibly. I mean, I think we'll be talking about MSU, you know, possibly winning the Super Bowl here if they beat Oregon. You know what I mean? But now that they have a poor outing against Oregon and they have 2 weeks to think about it, you sort of have to reevaluate the season for them and put a lot of things in context that were once hopes and dreams, viable hopes and dreams that could be reached at on the eve of that Oregon game. But now that the proof is in the pudding now and we saw what happened, again, that whole tone of the season now takes a different direction. There are many out there.
You know what? I disagree, Al.
You disagree. Why? Go ahead.
Because as much as, it's a different tone, they're not going to be in the top 3 teams. First of all, last year, if they beat Notre Dame, it was the same kind of conversation. Well, what if? What if they beat Notre Dame? What if they didn't pull?
But I think those are two different arguments, because Notre Dame is not on the level of premise when you compare them to Oregon. Notre Dame is no Oregon here. Oregon is, they're ranked number three in the nation
now. They're very different teams, and Oregon was a great team they would have beaten that could have propelled Michigan State to a top three team. I agree.
Exactly.
But the point is if they run the Big Ten table, they still have an unbelievable shot of making that Big Ten
I disagree. I do think there is a chance, but that chance is very, very dim. And this is the reason why I say that. When you talk about Oregon beating Michigan State, now I tell you what, now again, coming into that game, I said Michigan State had to make that game close. They had to make that game close in order to show everybody in the nation, including the selection committee, that Michigan State can hang with the big dogs in the nation. But seeing how that second half was so disastrous and how things really slipped away from Michigan State, looking at that score, Michigan State got blown out. As far as the national perception of Michigan State when the selection committee looks at the end of the season to see if Michigan State has a viable opportunity to make the playoff, they're going to harp on that Oregon game. There is no game on the rest of this schedule, on the rest of Michigan State's schedule, that you can point at as a litmus test, a legitimate litmus test, to argue that Michigan State deserves to be in that playoff, because they will never play another top three team in the nation here, Alex.
Al, if they look at that Oregon game, and Oregon runs the table in the Pac-12, which is very possible.
And you stole my next point here. If you're Michigan State,
you don't think they have a good chance of running the table?
Michigan State is going to win out this season.
No, Oregon.
There's some iffy ones there. I think Stanford can cause them some trouble here and there. I still think there's some bumps in the road. But I will say this: if you're a Michigan State fan, you have to be rooting for Oregon because it looks good on paper. Let's say Oregon is ranked number one in the nation or number two in the nation as the season, finals out here and they start to evaluate who deserves to be in the playoff. When the committee looks at Michigan State's schedule and they see that they played Oregon, when Michigan State played Oregon, and seeing as though they didn't make it close at halftime, they were leading at halftime at one point up by 9 at the start of the third quarter, they'll say, oh man, Michigan State was actually beating the number two or top dog in the nation. So strength of schedule, that argument certainly comes in there. But if Oregon has a poor outing and has some hiccups throughout the year, I guarantee there's going to be some people in that committee that says, okay, Michigan State should have won that game.
Yeah, but Al, when they lost to Notre Dame wasn't in the top 10, top 15. And for that reason alone, Oregon...
You're talking about Michigan State.
When Michigan State lost to Notre Dame last year...
Right.
Notre Dame wasn't in the top 10 or top 15 at all, which held them back when they were fighting. They could have been in the national championship game if they beat Notre Dame. But with this Oregon case, Oregon was a top three team. And if you compare it to the Notre Dame loss, I think they have a better chance of making a college playoff compared to last year at this point, because Oregon's just a better team than Notre Dame was. Regardless of the loss, Oregon is a great team.
Yeah, but Michigan State got blown out, Alex. That's the thing.
It wasn't blown out. It was a blowout. 20 points.
If you look at the on the schedule, what was the final score? It was a blowout. They lost by
25-27.
Yeah, that's a blowout on paper. When you look at that, that is a blowout. Michigan State got blown out.
A blowout is 20 points.
Yes,
or more.
Yes. So you want to argue how you define a blowout?
No.
Then come on, that is a 45-26 is a blowout on paper, Alex. You're telling me it's not a blowout, folks? Call in 517-355-9527. Did Michigan State get blown out against Oregon? Because I believe they did. Now they did look great. They had a lead. They had the lead against Oregon, a 9-point lead at one point against Oregon. But at the end of the day, Oregon turned that notch up and they blew Michigan State out, Alex. But the thing is, this is another thing, though, that you got to take into consideration. That weekend was one of the most disastrous weekends for the Big Ten in quite some time. If not only, because this wasn't just about Michigan State here, it was about the overall perception of how people view the Big Ten. Can the Big Ten play with the big dogs? And you saw so many hiccups that weekend for the Big Ten. I mean, was it Nebraska barely squeaks out a win against who?
Michigan State.
McNeese State?
Michigan State.
Michigan gets blown out by Notre Dame?
Al, look at all the wins that Michigan State squeaked out in the first four weeks. Look at all the wins they squeaked out, Michigan
but
State.
When? What are you talking about?
Last year.
That's last season, Alex. I'm not talking about last year.
But it doesn't matter. What I'm saying is, last year, there were also close squeak-out wins that Michigan State had, so that's why you shouldn't worry about
that. But the college football playoff wasn't enacted last year. We're talking about this season, Alex. And when you talk about the college football playoff, these are factors that you have to take in consideration. Strength of schedule, perception of the overall conference, things of that nature, blowouts, all of those are coupled into the minds of the selection committee. And right now, it is not boding well for Michigan State. Again, right now, the only thing you have to harp on is if Oregon has an incredible season, an incredible year, it shows that Michigan State played a top-tier team, so maybe we give them a pass on getting blown out against Oregon. Maybe we throw them in because they played one of the best. You know, so that's really for me. But overall that weekend, I mean, the Big Ten looked terrible. It looked like they didn't even belong to be in the conversation of the 4-team playoff.
Yeah, no, I agree.
You know what I'm saying? So, but overall, for Michigan State now, I do think they will win out. I think they will win out the rest of the year. I always go back to what if they beat Oregon, but that's in the past now. You got to kind of move on from it. Against EMU, I think that MSU will cover, or if not, get close to covering that 45.5-point, Las Vegas odd favorite for Michigan State. I think they will come close to covering this weekend, because EMU, let's be honest, EMU isn't great. EMU is they haven't looked great these past few weeks to start their year. But for me, it's the little things in games like this. Michigan State, we saw them have a lot of blown defensive assignments, something that we're not characteristic to seeing from a Michigan State defensive team. I'll be definitely harping on that, because those are the little things that matter against the big teams. Michigan State can't have blown assignments. They just can't. I mean, it was so alarming for me. And I think honestly, Alex, I think this MSU defense has been spoiled a little bit. Spoiled by having a guy like Max Bulla, who was just, if you read so many quotes from him, talking about, you know, when I talk to the offensive coordinators and just the overall coaching personnel about Max Bulla, I mean, Max Bulla was so savvy and knew that defense so well. He was just a gifted mental football guy. I mean, he knew the game so well that, I was looking at a quote 2 days ago, I forget, from one of the assistant coaches from earlier this week, and he was saying how, you know, Max Bulla, I mean, we would tell Max what to do, and he would go out there and just, you know, change up things and not do what we told him, and it would work out because he saw adjustments in the offense. I mean, he had a gift. Max Bulla had a gift. But now when you throw in a guy, you know, who's running the mic, and a guy like, you know, Tywan Jones, and just this new personnel who are stuck in these roles now and trying to fill the shoes of Max Bulla, hiccups are going to happen. And we saw that against Oregon. You're going to hear me say hiccup a lot, because those were hiccups. There were a lot of hiccups in that Oregon game,
but
defensively.
Were the major hiccups from the linebackers?
Yeah, they didn't make adjustments.
You went on the show last week, Al, and talked about how many hiccups the secondary blew. You harped all on the secondary, and that was the reason why they had those big
adjustments
plays.
For the secondary come from who, Alex? Who's
it's
the quarterback?
Not solely
who's
from
the quarterback of the defense?
Linebacker.
Thank you. Those are the guys who relay what they're seeing from the offense and make those adjustments. Now, also with the safeties, they sort of make adjustments for the corners as well. But those linebackers, and they talked about, though, but I mean, Curtis Drummond and those guys talked about it. Tywan Jones blew some of the, he didn't see certain
things.
Tywan
Jones can't control Oregon running wheel routes and getting behind the secondary.
They
got blown out of their coverage. It's not entirely Tywan Jones' fault.
I'm not putting it all on Tywan Jones. It was.
I wouldn't even say it's majorly hard.
It was defensive blown assignments, coupled with supreme offensive talent of Oregon.
Right.
Because
the majority doesn't fall on Tywan Jones.
No, I mean, a lot of it does. A lot of it does.
I'd say 50-50.
If the offense is not running smoothly, who takes the blame? Who takes the blame?
The defense.
The quarterback.
If
the offense does not come out and produce efficiently, who takes most of the blame?
Okay, the quarterback.
Quarterback does, because he's the guy. He's the man. He's the captain, so to speak. And if the defense messes up, they're looking at the mic, usually. The middle linebacker. And, you know, and I'm not saying it's all on Tywan Jones. There were certainly blown coverage here, you know, that I just feel as though Tywan he wasn't a great communicator. He could have been a better communicator in that game. So those defensive assignments that we're not accustomed, you know, to seeing from a MSU-type defense, those are things that I'm going to be looking at, the little things. I mean, they can blow some defensive assignments to Eastern Michigan, because I'm pretty sure that, you know, 2 plays later, they're going to be fine. You know what I mean? They're playing Eastern Michigan here. This is going to be a blowout game, period. But there's those little things that get amplified playing the big dogs. So, but overall, I just think, you know, and I don't want to bash MSU's defense. I am by no means bashing MSU's defense here. It was really, ideally, one quarter of bad football that put Michigan State down in the dumps against Oregon. So I'm not saying that, you know, Michigan State's defense is in panic mode by no means. I'm just saying, you know, if you're playing a team and you want to be considered one of the nation's best, you can't be just good. You have to be great. Period. If Michigan State is going to cross that hump, and not even just on the defense, on the offense too, for Michigan State to cross that hump from being one of the best in the nation to being the best or one of the elite, it's the little things that matter. It's those things right there, folks. So, but I think against Eastern Michigan, a game like this, though, to wrap up this Eastern Michigan preview, this is a chance, ideally, for backups to sort of define their roles going forth. I think it'll be a blow early. This game is going to get out of the hands of the Eagles pretty early. You'll see the backups in and get some reps. I think their roles will be defined. Who's going to be the solidified backup, you know, linebacker or lineman here and there. And I think that, you know, now going back to your point that you made earlier about this discussion, Mark D'Antonio, you know, and really, ideally, this is another thing that factors into this playoff, too. How bad you blow out teams is you know, I get the coach speak. I get the, yeah, we want to be classy and we don't want to run up the score or, you know, or go for 2-point conversions and so on and so forth. But can we be real here? Blowouts look really, really good at the end of the day. For a team who's trying to make that 4-team playoff. They look sexy. Blowouts look sexy this year, folks. I don't care how you want to put it. I love D'Antonio. I understand where D'Antonio is coming from. D'Antonio is a classy, classy guy. One of the classiest coaches I've ever met. One of the classiest coaches in all of college football. He says he won't run up the score. But again, this is all about perception. Blowouts are sexy. Point blank, period. Now, you know, I really think, ideally, you know, Mark D'Antonio won't try to run up the score, but against Eastern Michigan, I think it's just naturally going to happen because you're playing Eastern Michigan. That's why, I think it's going to be a game that's really going to get out the hand of the Eagles. And, you know, I think this game isn't about if MSU wins, it's about how they win. It will come down to the little things. Alex, let's give a score prediction. I'm going MSU 43, EMU 10.
I think it's going to be way more, man. I'm going MSU 52. 52, Al.
That's a lot.
52.
A lot of points.
EMU 7.
There you have that. If you got a thought or a prediction, score prediction, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Well, I'll tell you what, going on to our next game preview here, U of M, a big, 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 big game against Utah on Saturday. Many people predicting that Michigan may get upset here by the Utes. Well, I tell you what, Alex, this is a game that's going to be very intriguing because you have, ideally, this is the key matchup for me in this game. It's going to be Michigan's offensive line versus Utah's defensive line. That is the key matchup for me.
That's big, but for me, the key, look how many points Utah puts up on the board their first two games.
But who have they played, though?
Fresno State, which don't knock them too bad, not a horrible team. I mean, they're not like Eastern Michigan. But the Utes, I mean, they're a Pac-12 team, Al. This isn't no cakewalk here.
Yeah, and you know, with Utah coming from the Mountain West Conference now to the Pac-12, and they've had about now back-to-back bowl-less seasons. I mean, they're kind of foaming at the mouth
bottom,
to prove.
Sure.
Right, they've had two back-to-back. They haven't made a bowl in 2 years now. And, you know, I think the frustration is surely mounting here. This is a big game for them because they are a team, sort of like in a position of Rutgers in Maryland now, where they're trying to prove that they can hang with the Pac-12. You know what I mean? So for them, but look at this defensive line. I mean, it's so alarming. It really stands out to me. Did you know that? I mean, right now Utah's defensive line, the history of this defensive line core is certainly amazing. Three Utah defensive linemen have been drafted in the past 2 years. At least an all conference defensive lineman in every season, folks, since 2001. Now, they finished 5-7 last year, but finished second nationally in sacks and in the top 20 in rush defense. This is in the nation, folks. And two games into the season, Utah leads the entire nation, with 5.5 sacks per game and 10.5 tackles for a loss per game. Wow. I mean, you can make a legit argument that Utah's defensive line in the past 5 years or so has been the best in the nation. And looking at how horrid this Michigan offensive line has been.
After last game, too, 0 points.
Exactly. You know, especially looking at last year as well with that offensive line. I mean, you can make an argument that was the worst offensive line in the history in the nation. So that's the matchup I'm going to be looking for, because that Michigan offensive line certainly – it's on the hot seat. That offensive line is on the hot seat, folks. Playing a Utah team who cranks out NFL defensive linemen. It's going to be interesting. Now, again, going back to Utah's your argument, Alex, that Utah, I mean, looking at who they played, I don't think that defensive line has been truly tested, I guess you can say, this season so far.
For Michigan?
I think this is a good test for Utah's defensive line. Oh, okay. Now playing a team like Michigan on the national stage. I mean, television, everybody's going to be watching this game and how they respond. So I'm not complete. Even though these numbers are gaudy, these numbers are certainly gaudy. They look really, really good. But the question for me is, if Utah's defensive line is as good as advertised, going to be a good test for both of them. We have a caller right now. Apache is on line one. Apache, I knew he was calling. This is the Wolverines are his boys. What's up, Apache?
They are, man. I ain't going to comment on Wolverines. I remember when it was the Big Two and the Little Eight, and you know what? I enjoy this much better, man. I like the variables. There's a lot of questions, and I like to see you guys' confidence going to go undefeated and all that.
Right.
It ain't that easy, brother. There's a lot of things got to fall in place.
That's right.
Luck is one of those elements. A bad call by the refs, for example, Notre Dame. Those weren't bad calls. Those are cheating calls, by the way.
Yeah.
You guys should have been in the title game. But let me say this. Was that a blowout? Maybe. Maybe it was. I was really impressed with MSU, and I told my son, I said, that's amazing. That defense is amazing, how you held those guys down for so long. But I had called in before the game that week and said my concern was MSU didn't have the depth to stay with them. They would get beat in late third quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter. That might have been they ran out of gas. It's a home game, too, and that's Oregon, okay?
Right.
But I don't think the committee considers all that. I think there's a lot of politics involved or where the people swaying, what's going to be a good matchup. It's political, too, man. The SEC West has got some really highly ranked teams nationally, but they're going to be playing each other. So they'll be knocking each other out. The thing I like about this so-called fake playoff is that in the past, if you lost a game, your season was over if you were geared toward a national championship. Okay, now you can lose a game and still be in that top four. There's a lot of things that can happen. I don't think there's any need for MSU to panic. I remember last year you guys were complaining about the quarterbacks, and here you are complaining about whether or not you're going to be in a national game.
it's always the little things about you.
Hey, man, welcome to the club. I think it's debatable whether or not that was a blowout. I'm not sure.
I agree. Yeah, we can. I feel as though it was because on paper, when I look, let's say somebody who's just looking at the game and looking at the final score. I mean, the final score is a blowout. But the thing you have to harp on.
If you didn't see the game, it looks like a blowout.
Exactly.
Yeah, I saw parts of it. I was going back and forth. I was blown away by Michigan State's courage, his ability to get the lead, to hold on to it, and shut them down a little bit. That defense still looks intact. I think you're lacking some depth. That's going to be the problem there.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to what you said, brother, the Big Ten doesn't look good.
Right.
As a whole. And that's something that people are going to complain about. If they get somebody in the Final Four, and even if they're undefeated in the Big Ten, they say, well, that's not a tough conference. We had MAC teams beating them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and all the other kind of stuff. But I'm not sure all the things coming to the conversation. If Florida State University loses that game this weekend, there can be the argument that, the first half, the Heisman quarterback wasn't there. And
yeah.
That's another variable.
Right.
And I'm sure they're going to consider that. If he comes back, he's setting all these records, he's in the running for the Heisman Trophy, you got to say, he's the best player in the country, and that's the best team, .this and .that. So it gets interesting at the end, but it becomes very, very political. And the SEC has the edge on every conference. But they've earned that over the last, 10 or 15 years.
Certainly.
Yeah, they have. And, hey, man, we dominate basketball, so I'd be satisfied with that, So we're the best conference in terms of basketball and some other things. So,
yep.
But anyway, I hope we do well. I wish you guys well. I think it's kind of strange for a coach to say, I won't run the score. I haven't heard a comment.
I know, right? D'Antonio, he feels as though it's kind of just, it's not classy to run up the score, and he won't. But ideally, those things kind of matter this year, more than ever, I think, about you.
Well, yeah, they do. They do, unfortunately, because in the past, that was a no-no.
Mm-hmm.
When teams like Nebraska and with Oklahoma and Michigan to run up the score on these small teams, that was unsportsmanlike conduct. Today, something you got to do. You got to be accountable, man. You got to be a dog, and that's because that's one of the criteria that they consider on down the line and so forth. So they kind of created that situation. But I think Michigan State is still in good shape, no matter how bad the Big Ten does. They got a lot of respect from last year, and they should have been in that title game. And you know, you can go to Notre Dame, baby. You're gonna have some issues.
Right.
I'm sorry, man. That leprechaun is on that field. We can't.
Right.
All right, guys, have a good day.
Hey, you too, Apache. Appreciate your call as always, my man. Gotta love Apache. That's great insight right there. All right. Well, Alex, really quickly, I mean, going back to the Michigan guy, and I think Apache made some great points there. You know, there's so many factors that weigh in. I honestly, to be honest with you, I don't like a four-team playoff. I think they will eventually expand it. I don't know. I just don't like the four-team playoff.
Making it more like an NCAA basketball tournament in a way. More 8-16 teams.
Yeah,
maybe?
Give me eight. Eight, I'm fine with eight. You give me eight and I'm happy. You give me eight and I'll shut up. But right now, four, I just feel as though it's too small. It's too small.
Maybe gradual, ease in.
Yeah, you know, and I think eventually it'll change. But right now, I it's better than the BCS. I'll tell you that. I don't even get me started on that. But all right, really quickly, give me a score prediction, Alex, for Utah and U of M.
Man, I think it's going to be a closer game than a lot of people think, but I still think Michigan will pull it out.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, they'll pull it out. Brady Hoke on the hot seat. I'm liking, with Utah's defense, as you harped on, I think it's going to be 31-24.
Ooh,
Michigan.
We were close.
What do you got?
Prior to the show, I remember sitting in there with Cheryl, Andrew, and yourself. I had said that I think Michigan's going to win. I said it very confident, too. I've thought about it. I kind of pondered it. I'm going with Utah.
Wow.
I'm going with Utah, man. I'm going 31-27. 31-27 Utah. Give me Utah. I think that Travis Wilson is going to have a big game. I think that Travis Wilson, he's been very, very good throughout these past few weeks. He can run. He does not shy away from contact, which could be a quasi catch 22 there. But U of M will produce a little bit of pressure on Travis. You know, he threw 16 interceptions through nine games last year, which was pretty alarming. But he's looked so good these past few weeks, and he seems to be more mature and very cool, calm, and collected. I think he'll tear up that Michigan secondary, 31-27, Utah.
I think Jabril Peppers is going to make an impact somehow.
Okay.
It hasn't been felt as far, thus far. But yeah, that secondary, like I said, so you agree, the secondary is going to be key, man. That's the key.
That's another key. That's my second key there. So, all right, folks, again, if you want to weigh in on anything that we talk about on today's show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we got a pretty cool guest coming up. You don't want to miss it. Hey. Don't do it. Don't touch that dial. Current Sports returns in just a sec. Welcome back to Current Sports, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Friday. Cannot believe it is already Friday. Hopefully, y'all are having a beautiful one. That's right. Put a smile on, folks. The weekend is almost here, all right? Well, I tell you what. I'm sure this team will be putting on a smile for many faces out at Spartan Stadium tomorrow, seeing as though they're pretty cool. They do some different things, something that you just don't see every day. A women's skydiving team entitled the Misty Blues. I sat down with the co-founder and director of the Misty Blues to talk about one pretty special moment that will be occurring tomorrow morning. The Misty Blues all-women skydiving team, which is sponsored by the Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan in partnership with Michigan State University, will thrill fans of all ages when they jump into Spartan Stadium prior to Michigan State and EMU kicking off tomorrow during Junior Spartan Day. Now, the jump is part of a larger statewide effort by Blue Cross called Pound Michigan Kids Can, whose goal is to encourage families to get kids eating right and being physically active. Now, Amanda Scheffler is the co-founder and director of the Misty Blues and joins me on today's Current Sports. Amanda, how are you doing?
I'm excellent. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for taking your time out to talk about this really, really cool initiative that will be taking place tomorrow at Spartan Stadium. Now, first of all, to talk about the Misty Blues, I want to talk about this team because I'm looking here on the website, and it says the world's only all-women skydiving demo team. I think that is very, very cool. First of all, for you, Amanda, how in the world did you get started in skydiving? And more importantly, why?
Well, how I got into it is kind of a funny story. I was talking to my mom in her kitchen, and you know, I was complaining to her about how bored I was and I needed to do something to spice up my life. And the thought just popped in my head, and I said it. I go, I should go skydiving. She looks at me and she goes, "Don't you dare!" So that's the moment I stood up, walked to the phone, made the phone call, I set up the appointment, and I've been jumping ever since.
So just because mom told you not to, you did it anyway, right?
That sealed the deal.
That's how it goes. Now, I got to talk about, you know, your very first jump. When you first decided to do this, I mean, what went through your head before you jumped out of that plane?
Oh, my goodness. It was really unbelievable. Like, it's really hard to imagine stepping off of a moving object into open space and not having any support. It's a very unnatural feeling and an unnatural thing to do. I was actually more scared on my second jump than I was on my first. My first jump, it was almost so overwhelming with all of the, you know, different senses and the different things that were going on, that was going on. It was hard to process it all and take it all in. So when I did my second skydive, that's when everything started settling in.
Oh, my goodness. So the second time is when you really had, you just kind of thought about everything that was going on, and you were probably just thinking too much, huh?
Yeah.
So for all of our listeners out there, I mean, for those who haven't done skydiving, you know, out of a plane, I want to do it. It's actually on my bucket list before I leave this earth. But what kind of take us through the process about the equipment and what happens and how high you go in the air for an average jump and everything, that just that whole process.
Well, the whole process, well, it depends on what skydiving discipline that I'm doing. If I'm doing a normal free-fall jump, either belly to earth or free-flying, then, you know, I usually get out at 14,000 feet. And then, you know, we fall free-fall for somewhere around a minute, and then we open our parachute. If I'm flying my wingsuit, then I'll be in free-fall for closer to 2 minutes. And if I'm doing crew, which is canopy relative work,
mm-hmm.
then I'll be in the air for 10 minutes because that's when I open up my canopy right after leaving the airplane at 14,000 feet, and I hook up with my friends in their canopies, and then we play around.
So 10 minutes you're in the air, huh?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow, that is pretty cool stuff. Now, what's the craziest jump you've ever done? How high?
17,500 is my highest.
Oh, boy. And when did that take place?
Oh, that was at Skydive Tecumseh, and that was years ago. I'm not sure exactly when.
That is pretty cool stuff. Now, with this, because this is certainly a thrill-seeking sport, an adrenaline rush, if you will, do you partake, other than skydiving, in other extreme sports like maybe bungee jumping, base jumping, I don't know, free running, any of that stuff?
I do base jump. I have almost 500 base jumps. I've been doing that for about 10 years now. I don't bungee jump. I never have done that. I'm not sure how much I would trust somebody else's rubber band. Whereas for
right.
myself, I'm a parachute rigger, so I know my gear is good to jump when I jump it. Cause I inspect it and pack it.
Exactly. Wow. So you do partake in a few others other than skydiving. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
What got you addicted to the sport? I mean, what made you constantly come back and say, "Man, I really like this"?
Well, the intensity of it, and yes, the adrenaline was a part of it. You go from, when you're doing the skydive, you go from everything being really loud and windy and really intense, and you're falling towards the ground at a really fast rate, and then you open up your canopy and it's just calm and quiet, and you can see for miles, and it's just beautiful and quiet. It's kind of like a hot air balloon ride. So there's two really big extremes in one sport.
Now, you've been doing this for a while, Amanda. Do you still ever, before you jump out of that plane or before you do a jump, do you get nervous at all still?
Yes. Yes, I do. Pretty much every skydive I do, I still get nervous, and so there's still a bit of an adrenaline rush that goes along with every skydive.
And what? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, it's okay. I still haven't got to the point yet where I feel really, really, really comfortable. You know, I don't want to get to that point either. Because when you get that comfortable, then you kind of get complacent, and then things can happen as well. So, I mean, it's exciting for me, and I'll continue to do it as long as it's exciting. And so far, it's been for 14 years.
Certainly. I'm sure you definitely have to, you know, dot your I's and cross your T's before you jump out and make sure everything is in place before you do a jump. Now, you know, I want to talk about the safety precautions really, really briefly here. What sort of safety precautions do you have? Because I'm sure you guys have backup parachutes, backups for the backup parachutes, I'm sure, right?
There's only one backup.
So okay, one backup.
Yeah, it's one container system one harness container system, but it actually has two container components, one for the reserve and one for the main. And the reserve has to be inspected and packed every 180 days by a certified parachute rigger. And then the main has to be packed by either the person who plans on jumping it or by a rigger.
Amanda, have you ever had a scare in the air?
A few.
What has happened?
There's been several.
Oh, boy. This is the nitty-gritty of the conversation here. What has happened? Just give me an example one time.
Well, I went to open my main container and nothing happened, and I did not realize it. Because I looked behind me to look for my main pilot chute, and it wasn't there. And I looked a couple times, and I didn't see it, and I couldn't feel anything. So I ended up pulling my reserve. Come to find out from a friend that watched the whole thing, my main pilot chute was laying on my container. So I couldn't see it, and I couldn't feel it, but it was out. So when I opened my reserve parachute opened, then my main pilot chute caught air, and then it pulled my main out. So then I had two canopies out. And then the main, it flew in front of me from between my legs, wrapped around my leg. And, I mean, I cut it away, and the two did not get entangled, and everything was fine. But it was kind of scary.
Without a doubt. I mean, when you go through a moment like that, I mean, what kept you coming back to the sport?
It's still fun, and it's still exciting, and I have a lot of great friends that do it as well. You know, I mean, it's the camaraderie is also part of it.
Gotta love that. All right, let's talk about the Misty Blues now. A fantastic all-women skydiving team. How in the world did the Misty Blues start, Amanda?
Well, you know what? With all of the girls on the team, it started 28 years ago. None of us know the name of the lady that started it because she only owned it for 2 years, and then she sold it to another lady named Sandy Williams. Mm-hmm. And we don't know who the founder is, and we don't know how the Misty Blues even got their name. To be honest with you, it's a mystery on the team.
Wow. So it's kind of like some quasi, you know, mystery type of aura around the team as well. That's kind of different.
Yeah.
Now, when you talk about this, you know, your team, I mean, do you guys compete against other skydiving teams? I mean, how does the skydiving culture, I mean, in that regard, go about? I mean, do you guys just do events?
We don't compete. We just do demonstrations. So we jump into, you know, for instance, Spartan Stadium, and we display different flags and advertisements, or jump the American flag, we also perform skydiving demonstrations at air shows. I think it was two weekends ago now, we were at a Selfridge air show.
Oh, wow, that's pretty cool stuff. So is this the first jump you guys are doing at Spartan Stadium tomorrow?
Well, we just did a jump in here at about 10:45 this morning.
Nice, so that was officially the first one.
Yeah, it was the first practice jump. We have another practice jump scheduled at 1:56 p.m., and then we will be jumping again tomorrow.
Nice. Okay, so did the first jump go pretty well this morning?
Oh, yeah, really well.
That's great. Now, you know, I got to bring up this cause because I think you guys are jumping for a very, very interesting cause, and one that is certainly admirable, to say the least. Tomorrow is Junior Spartan Day at Spartan Stadium, ladies and gents. And you guys, Amanda, are jumping in honor of a pretty cool cause. Can you tell us about it, Amanda?
Absolutely. It is an initiative from Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Michigan, and it's called My Kids Can. And it's to promote all kids in the state of Michigan to live a healthy lifestyle and to eat healthy and be active and to go outside and be active. It's recommended that kids are active for 60 minutes a day. And so it's to raise the awareness of child obesity and to, you know, promote that kids actually do go outside and play and get exercise and, you know, so that they can live an active, healthy lifestyle. And then that also, when kids learn healthy habits early on, they just continue it on as adults. And so that's what the whole campaign is about.
For you guys, Amanda, why did you guys decide to get involved with this specific cause?
Myself, there's a couple of mothers on the team, and then myself, I have a couple nephews as well, and I make sure I go outside and play with them, and it also seems like a lot of kids these days are just, you know, sitting inside playing video games or watching TV, and they're not going outside, and I mean, it's becoming more apparent that obesity, even in adults, is becoming an issue, and it ends up causing health problems later on. So the campaign isn't even just for kids alone. It's to raise awareness for the obesity problems, you know, with adults as well.
Certainly. And looking at the press release, there's an alarming statistic here that says that Michigan actually has the 18th highest childhood obesity rate in the country. Now, less than 40% of children in the state get the 60 minutes that Amanda talked about, a physical activity a day recommended by the American Academy of Pediatrics. Why do you think this is such an alarming problem right here in Michigan, Amanda?
Well, because it's so cold and nobody wants to go outside when it's cold.
There you go. That was my point I was about to make, right? That is so true. Now, is there anything positive to look at to show that this trend will be reversed in the near future?
Oh, absolutely. All it takes is individual initiative. You know, just to be healthy. If you go outside, if you try to make an effort, even in the beginning, to go outside 30 minutes a day, you can find yourself, you know, feeling better and feeling like you have more energy. And eventually, when you start, you know, slowly working outside and slowly, you know, working out and getting exercise, then it becomes easier and easier to add a little bit more into your schedule every day. And eventually, you'll end up being, you know, your healthiest.
So with the Misty Blues, Amanda, do you guys jump for causes like this all the time?
Well, let me think. Also, you know, I don't think we've done any. I don't think we've jumped for any cause this big before, actually.
Nice. So this is like the first one.
I think so.
That is pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. All right, Amanda. Well, I'll wrap up Mimi ID really quick. Amanda Scheffler, co-founder and director of the Misty Blues. Again, Amanda, they can catch you over the skies tomorrow right before kickoff of Michigan State and EMU, right?
Correct.
There you have that. Amanda, thank you for your time and appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Oh, what a fantastic interview. I tell you, I that's scary stuff, especially when she started talking about these scares in the air. If my parachute didn't come out or came out at the same time as the backup one did and got tangled up, I would be in panic mode, in complete panic mode. I would never be in the sky again. But that's pretty cool stuff. So, again, but that's right before the game. They'll be flying right down the field, Amanda, along with the other members of the Misty Blues team, right before Michigan State and EMU kicks off. Going to be pretty cool stuff, folks. All right, well, 7 minutes left in the show. Again, if you want to call in and give some quick thoughts and or predictions on any of the weekend sporting action concerning the Michigan State football team, U of M, the Lions, anything, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Well, the Lions, I tell you what, the Lions will be taking on the Packers this weekend, Alex. Pretty big game here, seeing as though the Lions are coming off not a great outing against the Carolina Panthers. A chance to redeem themselves this Sunday. I tell you what, you know something that really stood out to me? Where was the Lions, especially in that Panthers game, where was their rushing attack?
Yeah.
For me, looking at another alarming statistic for the Lions here, the percentage of yards, 80.3 is the number here to think about. 80.3, okay? Now, that's the percentage of yards gained by the Lions this season through passing. That is the second highest the second highest in the NFL behind Jacksonville at 80.4. That's alarming to me. It shows that the Lions are really pass happy right now, providing more opportunities for Matthew Stafford to throw an interception and to make a mistake.
Why are you surprised? That was the whole point of bringing on Eric Ebron.
But the reason I'm surprised, because Joique Bell and Reggie Bush looked so good in the preseason, especially in the first game. They looked so great. Why did they totally abandon that in the second game? I was really puzzled by it.
They abandoned it because the front four for Carolina, even without Greg Hardy, is the best in the league, Al.
Yeah, I understand that. But
to establish the run, to establish the pass, they need a solid running game. So if they couldn't get the running game, they might as well just work with the pass.
Yeah, but still, you gotta find some. You know, just because it's not working for an extended period of time throughout the game, it doesn't mean you totally abandon it. You know, you can't just have Matthew Stafford getting pass happy the entire game. For me, looking at this Packers game, I think the Lions are going to try to rediscover their running game this week. I think you'll see big games from Reggie Bush and Joique Bell. I think you'll see those guys really emerge. For me, another thing, you know, look at the history between the Packers and Lions. The Packers, their record against the Lions since Mike McCarthy took over as coach in 2006 is 14-2. 14-2. Now, it's the third highest winning percentage by one team against a division opponent since then. That's pretty alarming stuff. So there's a sort of a history that certainly bodes well for the Packers there. Now, I'm not big into, you know, past records sort of influencing present day series, but you know, that's something to think about for all of you who are pretty superstitious. The Lions, I tell you what, they don't allow the rush. They have done very, very well at stopping teams who have tried to establish the run game on them. The Giants and the Panthers tried 34 rushes, either up the middle or behind guards in the first 2 weeks of the season, and both of those teams pretty much got nowhere, gaining only 69 yards. So the Lions have done a great job. You give a lot of credit to that defensive line for the Detroit Lions, who I think will put a lot of pressure on Aaron Rodgers this weekend. You won't see guys like Eddie Lacy have big gains. I think the Detroit Lions defensive line will play outstanding.
Yeah.
I'm going with the Lions in this game, man. I'm going with the Lions 27-21.
It's surprising that they're favored in, too. I thought that it's a little surprising.
Really?
But, you know, the Lions are ranked 9th in passing yards allowed defensively, which is surprising because I imagine with just the better front seven that they'd be probably more rush protected than pass protected. But
yeah,
I guess the pressure from the front four, you know, hurts regardless. So the key for this game is they got to get to Rodgers. Lacy, you know, you're not really expecting a lot out of him. It's more about Rodgers in the passing game. So if they can really put a lot of pressure and force him to make quick throws, then I think the Lions can win. However, I don't think they will. I think that they still have a lot of question marks in their secondary. I think the Packers are going to win, Al, in this game.
Really?
High scoring, but I think the Packers will pull it out. I'm looking maybe 35-24.
That's a very high scoring game. Okay. Yeah. Well, if you look at that first game of the season between the Seahawks and Packers, I mean, that's ideally what the Seahawks were able to do against Aaron Rodgers. They put a lot of pressure on him to force him to turn the ball over. I mean, once you put pressure on that on that Packers offense, I mean, they kind of fold. So yeah, I think that will happen. So all right. Okay, well, 2 minutes left. Let's really quickly, a Reflection Friday, where we kind of give you our favorite stories and moments here on the show or just in the sports world in general.
Oh, and I know what you're going to say. I know what you're going to – I mean, how can you not talk about Magic Johnson this week?
Oh, yeah, that's mine. That's
of
mine.
Of course. How could you not talk about it?
Now, Matt, sit down with Matt. That's my first time getting a chance to really meet Magic and sit down with him. I sat down with him for about 8 minutes or so, and, man, I mean, I tell you, one of the nicest individuals – I've ever met. So humble, so kind. Meeting Magic and going out to Lansing Everett High School. You don't want to miss that, too, because you'll get to see that interview that I did on Current Sports TV in the coming weeks. You don't want to miss that, folks. But, yeah, that's certainly my favorite moment. And we've had a lot of debates, interesting debates on the show, too, talking about Adrian Peterson and disciplining, you know, your child. And of course, this Ray Rice story that has dominated. J.Ru Campbell getting in trouble not once, not twice, but now three times. What a week. What a week. What about you, Alex?
Had to be when we had some of our interns on, when Tyler Beck was on, we talked about when it goes too far. Some powerful discussion. Outside the X's and O's for sure.
Certainly. And we'll continue it next week. We have a great week of Current Sports Radio next week. We'll be chatting with Trevor Manuel. who is a highly, highly recruited, nationally recruited basketball player now for Lansing Everett High School. I have a few high school coaches on next week. I saw a tweet here. We're going to try to get Tom Onassis on either next week or the week after next, as hockey is right around the corner as well. So much going on, folks. You don't want to miss any of it. And also, you'll also get to hear your chance, an opportunity to possibly win a chance to, possibly get an opportunity to sit in the current sports TV audience when I sit down with Jamel Hill. All right, folks. Well, that is our time. Thanks so much for listening to WKAR East Lansing. I am your host, Al Martin of Current Sports. Have a great weekend, and take care and be easy, people.